dedicated to all the hackers and the crackers.
To the hackers and the crackers.
I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, sitting firewalled ho. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll sue you on burning Dreamcast. You need some ISO? Let me through my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. You see, G, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones. And NASDAQ leaves you flat on your back. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack.
Dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial codes, source codes, ISO, RAM, SIP.
Welcome to Binary Revolution Radio, episode 112 for September 6, 2005. This is a recording. I'm Strom Carlson.
And I'm Black Ratchet. And we're here. I'm back. I'm back from Brazil. I filled all of my invoices and receipts and I don't know what else he was telling me to do because I actually haven't listened to last week's episode. So, yes, the cheering throngs of people who can now resume their dances as I have returned. And
yay!
I'm really tired. Yay! There was much rejoicing. Not much housekeeping this week. Any feedback from your episode, Strom?
Not that I'm aware of.
Nothing.
Yeah. So. Yes. Yeah, last week's episode, from what I can tell, is a success. No negative feedback, and we do have something new to announce. BinRev Radio now has a call-in voicemail line. So instead of emailing us, you can also leave us voicemail. And what we'll do is we'll listen to your recording, and if we think it's a relevant question, kind of the same criteria we use for the email, we will play your question on the air. So instead of us reading back your email and mispronouncing your name and criticizing your spelling, you just have your voice asking us the question on the radio show. So
and you can mispronounce your name in true BinRev fashion.
Yes. So if any of you call me Storm, I will not use your recording. But the number.
No, I think it's fair play. I think that we can mispronounce their name and you can pronounce theirs.
There'll just be an overdub of me saying Strom where you mispronounce Strom, because Strom's not a difficult name. Anyway.
Hi, I'd like to have a new episode. I have a question for Strom.
Anyway, the phone number, get your pencil and or other writing implement ready. The phone number is area code 213-415-1047. I repeat, area code 213-415-1047.
And even if you don't feel like leaving us voicemail, keep that number handy as it'll probably be our live call-in line whenever we actually get off our asses and do the show live.
Yes, when are we going to do that, Ratchet?
Eventually, when I'm ambitious, which should be sometime around the year 3050.
Oh, good, good. So yeah. You guys only have 1,045 years to wait.
Yep. Just mark it on your calendars, you know, go to Staples and buy some extra calendars.
Many extra calendars.
All right, we're going to go dip into the email bag this week, so here's the email. All right. Email bag is really, really low this week. I was just absolutely in shock at the sheer fact that we did not get any email. I guess all you kids have gone back to school or something and have more constructive things to do with their time. Anyway, our first email this week is from Anthony. And says, hello, I was just listening to episode 110, and I was really interested in downloading the different encoding samples you mentioned in the show. However, after visiting your website, I was unable to find them. And he says, www.blackratchet.org. I teach a telecommunications course, and I thought it would be really interesting to reinforce the concepts we talk about by having the students listen to the samples and actually hear the differences between different encoding schemes and sampling rates. Thank you for your time and any information you can provide. I just started listening to your show about a month ago and had to want to say, keep up the good work. And, Anthony, I would just like to say, my bad. I kind of revamped my website this week, and they got sort of lost in the shuffle. And I never actually posted all of the stuff. I don't think I actually ever posted the presentation we were talking about. Actually, I've never posted the presentation, period, because someone still has it stuck on his laptop.
Hey, there's a different versions we've been using for the radio show that you have a copy of. In fact, you had to mail it to me this week. So don't you go blaming me, Mr. Whatever the hell your name is.
Yeah, but I still haven't gotten any the thing we got from DEF CON that I've wanted to get up for almost a month now.
All
someone
right.
still has it on Schlage.
So we're both equally at blame here.
Yeah.
Maybe me more so than Ratchet. But
technically me more I was going to say myself more so than you in this email, but
okay. Well, anyway, I'm just going to take this moment to reinforce why you should call our call in line for voicemail, because I'm going to imitate a well known cartoon character by reading this off as sincerely rather than sincerely.
By the time you hopefully should hear this, all the stuff from our DEF CON presentation and this radio show, because we're actually doing the second part of the asterisk rehash this week because we're both deathly tired and just wanted to read stuff off the PowerPoint slide, is going to be up on my website, and that'll be blackratchet.org, the new and improved blackratchet.org, but we'll talk more about that later.
I'll also have a mirror up on stromcarlson.com. So you
yes,
have your
indeed.
Choice of orange or whatever the hell the color your site is.
Actually, my site's now kind of light aqua blue or some strange nonsense.
Okay. So orange or light aqua blue. It's your choice.
Yeah, nuclear orange.
Yes, nuclear orange, nuclear 1970s orange.
Yes. You can go read this one.
Okay. This one comes from, how did you pronounce it?
Axquan.
This one comes from Axquan. He says, hi. In a past episode, 110, you've talked about different codecs used by Asterisk and said that you're using one of them to save disk space. Well, as far as voice is concerned, it's quite good, but the opening and closing music sounds horrible. It was painful for me to even listen to that, not to mention taking pleasure from listening to it. So can you please change the sound quality to something better? I know that this extra 2 or 3 megabyte multiplied by the number of listeners gives a huge amount of bandwidth, but the show can't stand the way it is now. And one more thing about Strom Carlson Music Review TM. It might be a good idea to actually present some music before getting to review it, because talking about it without listening is like talking with a blind about colors.
Did you actually do the music review last week?
Yeah, I did the music review, and I'm not so sure how well it's going to work because, you know, again, people are really lax in actually sending me stuff. But it's probably going to move to the very end of the show as just kind of a last thought type of thing. But again, if you want me to review music, please send it in.
And also, it's not a problem about the extra bandwidth. BinRev has a hell of a lot of spandrifts to spare. However, you know, the way it works, we have to ratchet the up the stream, and people are listening to it, and people are listening to it on 56K connections, and even if we bump it up to, like, you know, 32 or 64, the amount of overhead involved means all of these people can't listen to it. I actually set up a stream this week. It was a rebroadcast of some New Orleans police traffic, and a couple of people couldn't listen to one of them because it was running at 32 kilobits a second, and apparently it was wreaking hell with their connections, and well, sadly enough, they lose. I couldn't actually fix anything about it the way I was doing it, but
yeah.
So, and plus, you know, we record the show in standard EULA, so, you know, we can pump it up to whatever you want, but it's still going to basically sound like EULA because, you know, that's the problem. We can't actually resample it up. We can only resample it down if it's at a certain bit.
Mm-hmm. One thing we are considering is recording the show in a more high-fidelity format and maybe having, like, a high-fidelity version you can download to listen
yes,
to.
Yes, we've been thinking about that.
So that'll
happen just before the live show.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, and also I'm reaching down to the bottom of the mailbag, and that's it. No one else has emailed us. I'm very sad and disappointed. So that's radio@binrev.com. Apparently, no one's listening or no one's emailing. So,
So listen, email, and give us calls.
Yes, and call. Call now.
Yes.
Call now. Or, operators are standing by, or at least a voicemail system is.
Yes. And you get to hear my wonderful pre-recorded message. And call and email, or I will personally come and do nasty things to you at ungodly hours of the night.
Oh, really? Ooh, that makes
me
excited.
Yes. Well, you know, I'm just kinky like that.
Yes. Anyway, what have you been doing this week, Strom?
Scrubbing the apartment, going back to school. Not all that much, to be honest.
Yes. Well, I figure going back to school is one of those big things.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going back to school for computers?
I'm going back to school for social sciences, though I haven't really narrowed down specifically what social science I want to end up taking.
Those lovely hacking degrees, like hacking social sciences or something. Well, computer science, social science, they all have science in it, so I guess that's okay.
Define computer. Define science.
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't been doing much. I actually set up blackratchet.org and completely revamped it. Yes, actually, everyone, I'm saying .org, so just deal with it and don't send me email about it. I pumped that up. I actually installed WordPress in a kind of way of actually making me update it more often, and it's sort of starting to work. I guess the initial, newness of it is going to wear off at some point, and I'll stop updating it, but it'll at least make it a little more simpler. Also, I've been working with...
I tried the blogging software once upon a time, and that was a dead end. I went back to static HTML pages. I just didn't have the energy or the inclination to keep updating it all that often.
It's also that, and it's also when you install a software package, you're basically limited by that software package.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's more than a few things that I'm having a problem with WordPress, which are kind of minor annoyances, and that's what you lose when you lose all the little bits of custom. Having everything you want it to be when you install someone else's software package. But, of course, hey, that happens with every software package. Speaking of websites, I've also been working on the Boston 2600 website. We're going to set up a couple of things, and hopefully we're going to have them on the show next week talking about some of their new projects, which are going to be somewhat interesting, and see if we can't get them off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
We also are currently working on some undisclosed projects. Strom, you don't even know about this, so haha.
Oh, well, my project that I'm going to disclose is we're going to do a radio show at some point in the not-too-distant future called Introduction to Freaking. So if you guys have any phone freaking questions, send them on in or leave us a voicemail at the aforementioned number.
Yes. Everyone seems to be asking about this at least once or twice a week ever since we started taking over the show. And it's in the works. It's going to happen. Maybe we'll have that as our first live show.
That'll work. We can have people call in.
That's a great idea.
It's brilliant.
Okay.
Of course it's a good idea.
Yeah. Anyway, our main topic tonight is we're going to finish up our Asterisk presentation. So sit back, enjoy, and go to actually blackratchet.org and download it, or stromcarlson.com. We'll have it for display.
And you can follow along with the slideshow, as we sort of kind of promised, and that didn't happen last time. So
And actually, this is going to be a bit more involved, because we're actually going to have little bits of code and fun stuff like that.
I need a glass of milk while we get started.
Not a glass of milk.
Yes.
All right, well, we're going to kick off basically where we left off last time, and it's interconnecting Asterisk and how basically you can design networks with Asterisk and set everything up. So we're going to go over.
Fortunately, I think this is your part of the presentation anyway.
Yeah, so you don't need to. You can just sort of skip over on your milk there. And my presentation's not working.
You were supposed to have this working ahead of time, Ratchet.
It is. It's there we go. I don't know. That's really weird. It was just not responding to any of my keys. I wonder if my virus scan kicked off. Anyway, we're going to kick off with interconnecting Asterisk tonight. So just sort of bring up your presentation that you've downloaded and pull out this. And the first thing we're going to talk about is E.164 or something called enum. And that's basically it's a system that's based on DNS. It's supposed to design to translate phone numbers over to addresses so people can basically interconnect VoIP with...
One, One thing I should just interject before you get started. The title slide you're looking for is called Interconnecting Asterisk Network Design, because there's another Interconnecting Asterisk slide before this. So network design is what you want to look for.
Yes, network design. There we go. And we're going to talk about enum, which is a way of designing networks. So like I said, it was based on DNS. It's designed to basically translate phone numbers to URLs. What it is designed to allow any number to be queried. If it exists, then basically you dial a number. If you query it, and if it exists, you can bypass the public switch telephone network and not have to pay for anything. It was designed by the ITU, which, as you were paying attention 2 weeks ago, it's the International Telecommunications Union. And officially, it's supposed to be used by telephone companies. E164.org, it's a free do-it-yourself solution. What they do is they have over 350,000 numbers on records, including my own. And what they also brag about is having 78 million special PSTN services. But basically, that's not that exciting. It sounds a lot more important than what it really is, which is 800 numbers. So how enum works, and I'm basically going to be describing, we have this wonderful little graphic, but that doesn't work well on the radio. So say I want to call Strom, and I pick up my phone and I dial 311-555-2368, which, of course, as you all know, is Strom's number, so call him today.
Use the example of my real number on our network here.
Well, I don't know what the heck that one is.
It's
anyway,
5,000, isn't it?
Oh, that one. I didn't know we were talking about that one. I thought we were talking about your other real phone number, and I was like, why does he want to give that over the air?
No, actually, we'll save that number for. I'm just talking on my ass. Never mind.
Yeah.
Keep going.
So I pick up and I dial a phone number. My PBX, what it does is it queries an enum server that I've already specified in the configurations, and it knows how to talk to it. So my PBX says, hey, I have this phone number. It's 311-555-2368, at which point the enum server goes, checks this database and returns back, oh, that's Strom at stromcarlson.com, and it feeds that back in my PBX. Now that my PBX knows it's a URL and it can actually, use voice over IP, it chooses and actually routes the phone call over to Strom at stromcarlson.com rather than actually picking up the telephone network and dialing 311-555-2368, at which point, because it's all voice over IP, it's free, saves me money, and I don't have to deal with Verizon, which is always a plus. And so it's a really cool concept. However, there's more than a few problems with it. It's a very top-down way of doing a lookup. It's centrally managed, centrally served, centrally centralized. For example, if I wanted to specify a new phone number for myself, I'd have to talk to somebody. He'd have to make a configuration change on his server, and it would have to get bumped up. And everyone has to use the same server and the same DNS hierarchy. So it's a lot of red tape to deal with. And as far as I know, it's not in use by any telephone providers. And my idea behind this is, hey, why should they save you money? What the hell? So in reality, it's nowhere near critical mass yet. How many phone numbers are in an area code?
It's like 7.2 million after the JGAP special codes or something.
Yeah, so 7.2 million phone numbers, and this E164.org has 350,000. So it's a drop in the bucket. How many area codes are there currently? Hundreds? Has to be, because more than 10. And I can't say thousands, because there's only three digits. So enum is one way of doing it, and there's another protocol out there called DUNDI, and it's Distributed Universal Number Discovery. And it's not designed by the ITU, but, it's designed by the good folks at Digium, the people who make Asterisk, and therefore, it has to be good. It's basically, they took E164 and made it a fully peer-to-peer solution. And it's insanely easy to use and set up, and Strom and I and a couple of friends, we've essentially used DUNDI to make our own telephone network.
Mm-hmm. We have our own number plan.
Has our own number plan, have our own area code. And I think how long do we have? After wrangling everybody and making them use a certain numbering plan, I think we had it working within 24 hours.
Oh, yeah.
With everyone deploying their configurations. If you get enough people in a room and you're all logged into your servers, you can have it up and running. And it probably, I'd say about an hour. It's not hard at all. Basically, it's a do-it-yourself alternative, rather than waiting for your own company to deploy E164, which probably will happen right before the show goes live. how Dundee works, it's a lot like Nutella. Basically, what happens is you pick up a phone. I pick up my phone number and I dial Strom 311-555-2368, and my server talks to, you know, its two servers in the node, and those two servers talk to their two servers that they know. It could vary with the numbers and everything. But essentially what it is it propagates a request out the network, and if someone knows how to dial it, it says, oh, hey, I know how to dial that, and it sends a reply back over the network, back to my PBX, saying, oh, that's me, contact me at, you know, and it gives a URL. So it's a very interesting way. It's a very Nutella way of looking at things. For those of you who don't know what Nutella is, it was an old peer-to-peer filing sharing system that came out right after Napster. Could be dating myself there. Dundee, however, has a few problems. It requires everyone in the network to be honest, which is good for Strom, myself, our friends. We all know each other. We know someone's not going to start doing crazy Dundee things on the network. However, when you start publicly pushing the stuff, which you're trying to do, and basically a network where anyone can get on, I can suddenly route every phone call to the White House to my PBX and, you know, pick up the phone, pretend I'm George Bush, start World War III. It's, you know, fun stuff. The other problem with Dundee that I see is scalability.
The only problem, of course, with picking up the phone and pretending to be George Bush is that you would have to drill into the mouthpiece, and that just would kind of damage your phone after a while.
I'm not touching that one. We're politics-free. George Bush rocks. Yeah. Scalabilities could also be a problem with the fact that with all this traffic, if enough people start using it, the Dundee network is going to get flooded. This is what happened to Nutella back in the day. It didn't scale well. They've tried to implement a couple of workarounds to it, but that's the real reason why it never took off. Officially, it's not a standard yet, because standards cost money, and Digium, while it has some, doesn't really want to spend it on something like this. It's currently, I believe, still only available in the CVS version of Asterisk. There's a patch to actually have it ported into stable, but...
Well, it might be in stable 1.2. I'm not entirely sure. Stable 1.2.
Have they released 1.2 yet?
Yeah, I think they released 1.2.
I completely missed that. I guess I wasn't paying attention to my mailing list this week.
Bad,
okay.
Roger.
No, I believe it's in 1.2. They were talking about that. So maybe it is in Hable stable yet. Forget what I just said, everybody. My opinion, also, it's Dundee. It's D-U-N-D, lowercase I. And I think the I looks silly in the end. Quality of service. I think this is more of you, because I've never touched this, as you can tell by my garbled telephone conversations.
Well, what quality of service is basically, you know, if you've got a network where you've got voice and data running over the same network, you'll encounter situations where your data will clobber your voice, because a lot of data services are bursty, like, you know, web browsing and downloading files. It's not continuous, whereas, you know, voice really requires not a whole hell of a lot of bandwidth per call, but definitely a continuous, you know, stream of packets going from one location to another. So basically you have two...
Are you eating again?
No, I just sneezed. Basically what happens is I'm losing my train of thought. This is the disadvantage of doing a radio show while tired, folks.
Basically what happens is you... Yes, I've already done it.
Okay. Let me try this again. So basically what happens is that you've got, you know, bursty data like web browsing and downloading that compete for bandwidth with your telephone call. And the web browser, like, you know, you download a file, it'll suck up all your bandwidth for a short amount of time versus the telephone call that'll use, you know, not a whole lot of bandwidth, but needs it over a long period of time. So what you do is you implement some sort of quality of service routing, which ensures that your calls receive enough bandwidth to go through and low enough latency so that your calls sound, you know, not garbled and not jittery. There are two ways of doing this mainly. One is called priority queuing, where you give VoIP packets higher priority over other types of packets and send them out the router first. And there's also bandwidth shaping, which basically restricts the bandwidth of your VoIP calls to a certain amount of bandwidth and restricts the bandwidth of everything else to a certain amount of bandwidth. So
basically what you say is, you say, I want 90% of my bandwidth to browsing and 10% of my calls, 10% of my bandwidth to VoIP.
Yes, exactly. That way you ensure that you've always got at least X amount of kilobits per second for your VoIP calls. Many residential routers are now VoIP aware and will do a decent job of this out of the box. There was one that a friend mentioned to me. I don't recall the name off the top of my head, but I'll find out in a second.
I believe the PAP2 does this.
Yeah, the link says PAP2 does it. And also, I believe
my DG1120M from D-Link, I believe I got the model number right, has some type of capability built in. But this was a relatively early implementation of it, so I'm not sure how good it actually does it. I actually don't use it in the router portion of things, so it doesn't really matter.
I've got it in my email box here. A friend of mine sent it to me. Here it is. The Netopia 3346-ENT.
Yeah, okay. That's like a complete overkill.
Well,
yes, if you use that for your DSL connection, you are extremely rich, or you've suddenly run into a lot of money, or people are just tossing very expensive hardware at you for no reason.
Well, okay, it came in an email entitled from a friend with the subject line, "My new router that isn't too expensive and does QoS." So I assumed, you know.
I don't know. I could possibly be thinking of another model of it.
Perhaps.
Speaking of routers, can't you also do Cisco things to this?
Yeah, you can tweak a Cisco router to do this if you're doing it on a large scale, or if you're a Cisco freak, if you're a control freak, or whatever.
Strom falls into the control freak.
Yes. I've got a Cisco router that I do this with.
And for some reason, he always sounds fine even when I'm downloading stuff, but it's just, you know, I always sound garbled to him, so I don't know how that works, but I'm sure if I had some type of bandwidth shaping or quality of service that it would not happen.
Well, you know why it works, of course, because I'm Strom Carlson.
Yes, of course.
Packets fear me.
Yes, fajir.
Yes.
Anyway, extending Asterisk. Asterisk is really fun with all the stuff you can do right out of the box, but the big thing about it is that it has capability to expand, and you can basically have it do anything else that you want, with the exception of dishes.
Yeah. Again, we're working on that module. But the cool thing is, you know, because it runs on a Linux box, anything you can do in Linux, you can integrate with Asterisk for the most part.
And then some.
Yeah.
I don't think you can actually read brute code over to Linux kernel through Asterisk yet. But
the useless application that comes to my mind is, you know, nonlinear video editing over telephone.
Yeah, oh, indeed. Fast forward 20. Stop. Record. You can actually
pound to edit this section.
I don't really, or you can like control your webcam over the phone. Kind of uniquely useless. Anyway, so here's how you would do all this. They have this little thing built in called Asterisk Gateway Interface, or what basically everyone else refers to as AGI. It's a simple interface to adding functionality to Asterisk. It's cross language, you know, Perl, C, PHP, Lisp, whatever you want. And what it does is it uses standard in and standard out, and it allows any program to communicate with Asterisk via those two pipes. And I always say, since Asterisk is the best thing since sliced bread, AGI is the second best thing to sliced bread.
What about French
French bread? No, it's French. So, anyway, the next slide is a simple AGI program. It's this little 20 thing. And basically, it proves that you can use a bash script to talk to Asterisk, but however, it's really clunky. You have to write separate functions, and you have to do all kinds of error checking built in, and you can't do certain things with it easily. It's like this 20-line program that I actually had to spend an hour on writing. So how it works essentially is you pick up the phone and you connect, and your extensions and everything inside the Asterisk says, oh, I'm supposed to run this program when someone connects to me at this phone number. And so it starts this program and it feeds it all kinds of variables. And what it does is, the one I use in this example, basically it's a caller ID readback machine. And one of the variables it sends to it, along with what channel it's calling from, all kinds of internal tracking numbers in Asterisk, is AGI caller ID, which sends it as your caller ID. after all this is sent, it sends something called 200 result zero, which means I'm done. What do you want me to do? At which point the script replies, you know, stream a file called your caller ID is. So Asterisk interprets this command, and it streams back to you on your phone side a little audio file saying your caller ID is. And once that's been done, it sends back again 200 result zero. I'm done. What do you want me to do? At which point your script reads back, okay, you know, say these digits, caller ID number, you know, 31155523368, at which point Asterisk reads the numbers back to you, sends back the command, I'm done, what do you want me to do? And your script says, hang up now, I'm done, I really don't care. At which point Asterisk disconnects you, sends back that it's completed that, and the script terminates. It's a really simple way of doing it. It's amazingly elegant. So you can code things and do all kinds of these error checking modules and all kinds of crazy functions, or someone can actually do it for you, which is something called Asterisk AGI, which
before
is a pro module.
Before we go on to Asterisk AGI, know that the simple AGI program is a bash script.
It's a bash script. You can do it with anything.
Yeah. Really basic.
I mean, you can do it in assembly if you want. Fear. Because it uses standard in and standard out, you can use basically any programming language you want. There's a PHP module that I found out about. You can use that. I've never actually played around with it, so I'm not sure how complete it is. But, you know, the one that I always use is this pro module, Asterisk AGI. It simplifies a lot of AGI programming. I always look at it as it takes care of a lot of the dirty work, and it does the dirty work so you don't have to. It allows the AGI interface to be controlled via a very simple object interface. Rather old. It's not very well maintained, though. It allows AGI to easily integrate with Perl. And for anyone who doesn't know Perl, and I talked about it a few weeks ago, that Perl easily integrates with almost anything in the known universe. Of course, a lot of people are screaming that I said that, so let me go restate that. Perl integrates with almost anything in the universe. May not always be easy, but you can eventually do it. And the website is asterisk.gnuinter.net or stromcarlson.com. I think he has a mirror still up.
Yeah, I do. I noticed a while back that it wasn't on that website anymore, so I just put it up online.
Well, the website was just not there.
Mm-hmm.
It was fallen offline. Anyway, so the next slide is the symbol, the same program with Asterisk AGI, and basically it's committing condensed down from a 20-line program down to about 8. So it greatly simplifies the programming process, and you can do all kinds of crazy complex things with it. And you can do it with the bash script, but it's a whole lot easier to do it with this module because it does all the stuff that you don't – it allows you to think about all the stuff you want to do with your program rather than making sure that Asterisk is talking to your program correctly. So now you have all these wonderful scripts. How can you interact with your script? Now, input side, there's basically, you know, a few options. There's Touchtone, which is basic, ubiquitous, easy, and limited. Everyone knows how to use Touchtone. It's the little buttons on your phone. And I think everyone has it by now, except for probably like 3 people in eastern South Dakota or something. The more complex way is VXML, which stands for Voice XML. And Voice XML is a simple way of programming scripts to interact and talk to people. And I really haven't had that much experience with it, but it's really cool, and you can talk to a lot of the interactive agents that you talk to nowadays. Those are all based on VXML. However, the problem with VXML is that there's no native support in Asterisk. However, there is a program out there that's open source. It's called SIPXPBX, and it has a built-in VXML interpreter in it. And because it's SIP, and, you know, of course, Asterisk supports SIP, you can actually integrate it with Asterisk. However, I spent about, you know, 1 or 2 weeks trying to get this damn program to work, and I eventually just gave up in frustration because it was dependency hell with libraries. And I just cried after 2 weeks. Also with VXML, there's numerous commercial offerings, which, unfortunately, you have to pay for, but they all seem to work. And they all usually use SIP, so once again, you can use Asterisk with them. I believe that Microsoft has just released a VXML app for it. I'm not sure. Could be wrong. Anyway.
There are also many ways of having your script talk to the caller.
The yes, first output.
One, yeah, output. One of them is text-to-speech, which, as you know, kind of sounds like this depending on the voice engine that you use.
It sounds like War Games, which you should all listen, you should all watch at some point in your life.
Shall we play a game?
No, I think it's, would you like to play a game?
No. How about a nice game of chess?
There we go, that works.
Anyway, so there's a totally free open source thing. Is it open source?
Yes.
Okay. Free open source.
It's not GPL, though.
Yeah, not GPL, but open source. Text-to-speech system called Festival. There is native support for it in Asterisk, and it's free, and it sounds like crap.
I believe the term that some – I think you might have said this. It sounds like a Scottish guy that smoked 20 packs a day for the last 10 years of his life. it's not good, but you know, what do you expect for free?
Yeah. And there's another one called Kepstrel. Is it Kepstrel or Sepstrel? I don't remember.
I've heard both ways.
Yeah. It's Kepstrel or Sepstrel. It's C-E-P-S-T-R-A-L. And it can be easily integrated with Asterisk. In fact, I think Digium and Kepstrel started a strategic partnership or announced one at some point in the not-too-distant past. It sounds really good. You can actually understand it. And it's not free, but it's cheap. The voices, how much do you pay for the voices? Like $30?
Well, see, when I originally wrote this, I didn't fully understand their licensing scheme. And I was going on their $30 per voice charge, which is, you know, extremely cheap. However, I also didn't realize that there was another license you have to buy if you want to use it in your telephony setup. For example, if you – I'm sure you can get away with if you are the only one using it at all times over your phone system, you're okay. But, for example, if you want to use this in a call center setup, you apparently have to buy, like, this $200 license, which you know, for some of you may sound like a lot of money, but for, you know,
if you're setting up a call center, $200 is a drop in the bucket.
Yeah, so normally this, something like this would probably cost you around those lines of $10,000.
Mm-hmm. There is a free demo you can download. I think you can download all the different voices and play with them.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing is that, of course, if you don't pay for them, about every 5 or 10 words it says, please register me.
It's essentially it's Nagware, which is absolutely hilarious in a voice setup.
Yeah, I love it that the voice nags you. So this is the more serious email, which contains please register me. Or if you're doing, you know, text-to-speech of more steamy material. Oh, yes, I love it when you please register me.
Yes, I actually, when I always want to get a male and a female voice from Kepstrel Sepstrel. And, you know, set up like, you know, kepstrelsex.com. Like get an 800 number and just have this like guy and girl going at it. It would be quite humorous. I'm sure I could make like some money on a TV show, on a radio show, distributing around and making a song out of it. But anyway, interacting with your script, you know, plus the other way of doing it with output on scripts is, hey, you can record yourself.
Yeah.
And that's always free. Of course, if you want actually a good voice and not have yourself bumbling over the words like I do, there's a person you can hire. Her name is Allison Smith, and she's the official voice of Asterisk. All the little prompts that come in with Asterisk are all, you know, dictated by her. She of course, you know, makes her living on this, so you have to pay her. And however, there are a lot of canned sayings out on the internet. You can find her saying all kinds of weird and strange things, like talking about rattlesnake wrestling and buffalo branding. And
there's lots of weird stuff that comes built in with Asterisk, too. There's something about weasels have eaten our phone system.
Mm-hmm. Didn't one of your friends actually experiment with her to say, you know, see how vulgar she would get for pay?
Oh, yes. I had a friend of mine who kept buying phrases from her for increasingly, you know, with just these increasingly vulgar scripts, and he tried to find her limit, and she eventually found it.
What was the magic word? Actually, no, we're on the radio. There's something incredibly vulgar that she'll say, according to that she won't say, that deals with the female anatomy.
Yes, yes.
We'll leave it at
that. And it starts with the letter C.
So go figure it amongst yourself.
Yes. You can also hire me to do your recordings. I'm
Shameless plug.
Yeah, shameless plug.
Skip over that. So with all this stuff, you can actually write a more complex script, and this is basically a slide, and what I've done is I've wrote a script where basically you interact with the system by pressing various touchtones.
Well, I had to dump it, so we'll have two discontinuous recordings I'll have to put back together.
Oh, okay. Are we still recording?
Yeah, we're recording again.
All right. So basically, that's what the script is you can interact it with touchstones, and it will say different things. And I called the cnsa.pl. For those of you who don't know what a CNSA is, you weren't born in the 80s. So now that we actually have this all figured out, talking about all these wonderful ways you can integrate Asterisk with AGI and all these various systems, what can you actually do with this system? So I think the first big thing is caller ID spoofing, which is actually what got me into Asterisk. Asterisk allows you to set your own caller ID, much like a primary read interface, such as a T1.
Yeah. Well, and that's actually because the VoIP termination, when the gateway between your VoIP provider and the phone network, is a PRI. So you are, in fact, indirectly using a primary RAID ISDN interface.
Yes. And so certain termination providers will also let you set your something called calling party number of your SS7 message to whatever number you're setting your caller ID as well. I think, is this actually allowable, or
is what allowable?
Well, setting your CPN number, are they allowed you to do this, or?
Yeah, it's allowable. I mean,
okay.
There's perfectly valid reasons to do it. For example, you're using, you have an inbound number with one provider, but you prefer a different provider's outbound rates. You can set your outbound caller ID to your inbound number from the other provider.
Caller ID, yes. I was referring more to CPN.
Well, caller ID is derived from CPN. You should remember that.
Ah, true. Okay. Yes. Well, I'm tired. Leave me alone. Anyway, so when you set this stuff up, most switches will blindingly accept this information. For example, a number 5 ESS will accept caller ID along with something called a DMS 100, which 5 ESS is AT&T's and Bell system and Lucent's telephone switching
switch,
system. Yeah, end office switch. Thank you.
DMS 100. The Nortel end office switch.
Yes.
Nortel also makes a smaller end office switch called the DMS 10, which behaves similarly to the DMS 100. And that
I never actually tested this on a DMS 10, so I'm assuming it also accepts caller ID the same way.
Yeah, it does.
However, GTE's switch, the GTD5, blindingly accepts caller ID information, but also accepts your caller ID name. We actually found this out one day. Doug found this out one day when he was testing out one of his IX soft phones and set up test, and he called himself and got a phone call from test, and he was thoroughly excited and called up the bridge and started exclaiming, "Oh my God, my switch takes my caller ID name and does any checking with it." So that was fun. What can you actually do with caller ID spoofing? Confuse and amuse your friends. I mean, how many times have you received a phone call from Simpson, Homer J? With CPN, you can actually activate your neighbor's credit card because most, credit card companies and other people who say, "Oh, you need to call this phone number from your home phone," actually don't check your something called ANI, which stands for automatic number identification. Because
that's really actually charge number.
Charge number now, yes. The terms have changed, but it's all the same now.
We will cover this in our intro to Freaking, so don't you worry.
Yes, exactly.
And actually, the whole activate the someone's credit card, my roommate, before he moved out, he got a new credit card, and he said, "Hey, let's try this." So I picked up my VoIP phone and spoofed his number to the calling card to the credit card company's number, activated it just fine.
So you're not safe. Bum, bum, bum.
Bum, 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 bum.
It's something that they shouldn't do, but for 90% of the time, no, not even 90%, 99% of the time will work fine. However, there's little holes you can take advantage of, much like this. You can also charge calls to people that you don't like. This is slightly more complex and actually involves changing that charge number. However, certain phone equipment needs to be misconfigured for this to work. And I think the easiest way that I've ever discovered doing this, or excuse me, I've never actually done it. The easiest way I've ever heard of someone doing this, I'm actually saying that, I actually haven't done this, is a certain company's calling card can be used to do this. I've never, like I said, never actually done it. I don't know. I'm not even sure if they fixed it by now, so go figure. Caller ID spoofing, you can also set up own Paris Hilton's voicemail. T-Mobile actually upgraded their system to kind of combat this. However, they're still vulnerable in many ways. So they never actually plugged all the holes.
Yeah, one of the holes that they have is, when you set up your voicemail, you have the option of, if you're calling from your mobile phone, not to enter your PIN number. and when you dial in as a convenience feature, but you can set it to. I personally recommend that you make it always ask for your PIN regardless. And I think they did they may have done some sort of reset because I checked my voicemail recently and it made me choose again whether or not to have me enter my PIN when I call from my mobile phone.
So oh, that's interesting. Yeah. What happened to me was recently they finally got around to upgrading my voicemail with this upgrade that's been happening for a couple of months. And that was one of the options to set up things. And I haven't actually had them, you know, confirmed me or anything, but I set it up. You should too. Singular, actually, I was hearing that they took a step backwards in this and that fact that their new voicemail system is now vulnerable as opposed to their old one, which really wasn't. I don't know exactly how that works, but anyway, there's more than a few phone companies that are vulnerable to CPN spoofing, and you just basically call the person's phone, and if it drops a voicemail and you're spoofing their own phone number, it thinks that you're that person calling their phone, and if you don't have a PIN set up or you don't have it set up to prompt for your PIN, you drop right into the voicemail box. So always set up a PIN, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the most ubiquitous use of this is, hey, social engineering, because caller ID is always right, right?
Hello, Mr. Johnson. I'm calling from the IRS, and we need to know certain personal details about you.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, yes, I am calling from 202-555-2368.
couple of simple caller ID spoofing scripts. Nick84 has one at rootsecure.net. I think if you enter, like, caller ID spoofing asterisk into Google, you'll pop right over to it. And Knot Theory actually released one, and I'm not actually sure there was a link, but bellsmind.net. I don't think he actually has it posted, but
yeah.
Still,
but honestly,
you should go check out that website.
Yeah, it's ridiculously easy to do with two lines in your dial plan. One is a set caller ID, and one is a dial statement.
Yes.
So, like, I have it set up, so I just dial a string of numbers at the dial tone, and that does my caller ID spoofing.
I use Nick84 scripts because I'm lazy, and I've never actually had to change it. The other thing you can do, one of the other things you can do with this is back spoofing, and it's sort of related to caller ID spoofing. And this is a relatively new concept. I'd say it's about 6 months old or so. Again, Knot Theory was a big pioneer in this. So was it NAT.
No, it's more than 6 months old. It's at least probably a year and 6 months.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm wrong. Natus was another person at this at oldschoolfreak.com. And Vox, who's allegedly around Massachusetts, but I never run into him. He doesn't have a website right now, so we can't actually plug him.
Mm.
Basically, what it does is fools the phone company in providing the name associated with a telephone number, both listed and unlisted. So what happens is you basically spoof caller ID to yourself. So, for example, I pick up my phone and I spoof caller ID to my landline. And what happens is Verizon, my local exchange carrier, sees that I'm getting a phone number with my caller ID and looks up the number in his caller ID database, which is abbreviated CNAM, and I think it stands for Calling Name Database
or something like that, yeah.
Yeah. And essentially what happens is when it displays the phone number, I get the phone number that's being spoofed, but I also get the name associated with that number.
Mm-hmm. The name according to the phone company, not according to the address box. So,
yes, yes.
More proof that Verizon isn't exactly totally useless. They are good for something.
I wouldn't go that far.
Yeah. There's a, in the slideshow we'll have up on the website, there's a picture of me back spoofing to myself and pretending to be Ticketmaster.
Yes, it's not that exciting, but that is basically, you look like you're getting a phone call from Ticketmaster.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's a couple of uses to back spoofing. Knot Theory thought of this one called pre-scanning, and basically what it allows you to do is prioritize the more interesting phone numbers if you're going to hand scan a block of 1,000 numbers or so, because you're insane. Some of the fun, interesting things that Natus found when he was playing around with this for a couple of times was something called NET5ESS, like, for example, number 5 ESS's internet connection. Office number 897 test line, Verizon information, and something called International CIA. Mm-hmm. And this was actually nowhere near Washington. I forget where he got this. But apparently CIA has a office somewhere. And a couple of fun ones was booze and unclaimed money. So that's weird. I don't even know what those phone numbers are.
Hello, I'd like to claim my free booze and unclaimed money.
Yeah, there are two separate things, but I just really would like to call the booze number and see what the hell they are. Probably a liquor store someplace.
Probably.
Interesting way of... Yeah. Basically, it's a very cheap reverse lookup because if you don't answer the phone call, you don't get charged for this service, mm-hmm. if you could call it that.
Yeah, but the phone company does actually have to pay, you know, maybe 1 cent for the database dip. So if you're going to do something like this, don't do 10,000 at a time.
Unless you want to bank up Verizon.
Yeah.
Ooh, hey.
Yeah, or unless you want the phone company calling you saying, sir, what exactly is going on with your phone line? You're receiving, you know, hundreds of calls, you know, 2 seconds apart, and you're not answering any of them. They're all from different locations. We don't understand what's going on. What are you doing, sir?
Just say I'm a very popular guy, and I really don't care about answering these phone calls. A couple of people got owned by this, like, you know, certain celebrities like Lindsay Lohan and Nikki Hilton both had listed cell phone numbers, and basically someone backspoofed the entire Beverly Hills T-Mobile circuit and got all these wonderful celebrity names. Yeah.
Which is, if you want anonymity, do not get a number in Beverly Hills.
If you want anonymity, don't get a number in T-Mobile.
Yes, that's true as well.
Yes. Would you like to talk about your super caller ID?
Yes. Super caller ID is something that I thought up on a whim and then threw together in about half an hour. It extrapolates absolutely tons of useless data from a telephone number. It does a reverse lookup on whitepages.com. It gives you name and address associated with that number. And it gives you switch information from the LERD, which is the Telcordia Local Exchange Routing Guide, which is basically a database of every switch in North America. In my apartment, it runs, or at least ran, on its own dedicated Weiss 150 terminal. I do have the Weiss 150 in storage somewhere, but I've moved desks since then. I haven't bothered to set it up again. And a less customized version, which doesn't use the LERG, in case you don't have access to the LERG, which costs Mondo dollars, is available at natasaside@oldschoolfreak.com, and he's constantly updating it with changes the way White Pages does things and so on. And next slide is a photograph of me using it to backspoof Gladstones for Fish to my phone line, and you can see that it comes back with the number Gladstones for Fish Malibu and the address in Malibu 90272, and then it gives a listing of the switch, 310 Gladstone 4. It's the Verizon GTD5 in Pacific Palisades, California. It tells you operator and feature group D routings. So in this case,
which is useless information, which none of you would really care about, but
right.
Well, people like us would.
Yeah, feature group D is where regular toll calls. There's a cricket in my apartment somewhere. Feature group D is where regular toll calls read through, and then operator services are where operator assisted calls go through. So it tells you that, and then it tells you some of the prefix codes that switch serves, and so on.
All kinds of, like I said, all kinds of useless information that most of you wouldn't care about, but we would.
Yes, because we're phone freaks.
Yes. A fun idea that I sort of thought of, along with Not Theory and Natus, was ringing
I
radio.
I thought of that, but I never told anyone.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I'll give you credit for that, too. But you didn't say anything, so you could be making up random statements right now.
Anyway, I sound like the kind of person who would make up random statements?
You always would have that crazy gleam in your eye.
Cast Sex the Musical.
Yes. Anyway, so rigging radio contest. Basically, radio rigging, radio contests and radio stations have a hunt group for their contest lines. And what a hunt group is, for those who don't know, is it's a single telephone number that hunts for free wire pairs on a switch. And it could go on to, you dial, you know, 555-8000. In reality, it actually checks 8001, 8002, 8003, all the way like down 8050 to, and it rings the first free one that it finds. Back in the day, crackers would busy out the hunt line at the switch, disallowing the public to call it, while they actually called the individual lines directly to make it look like tons of people were calling so the radio station doesn't get suspicious. And so when they're doing this, the result is that they win, the public loses, the line is re-enabled back after the contest, and everyone is none the wiser except for them. And I believe Dark Dante, a.k.a. Kevin Polson, He used his method to win a Porsche, which was later confiscated after he was arrested, but we won't get into that. So Nanison knot theory helped me about discuss this, and we all bounced ideas off each other. Certain providers allow numerous simultaneous outbound calls, up to about 100 in some cases, sometimes more. To put this into perspective, a DS1 or a T1 allows 24 simultaneous calls, and a DS3/T3 allows 672 simultaneous calls at one point. Radio station hunt groups, they can have anywhere between 20 to 30 lines on their hunt groups. And what happens if they're suddenly inundated with 300 calls? And what happens is it won't guarantee a win, but you'll definitely increase your odds of winning. So how it works is basically you call a conference bridge, and then you run a script that basically starts calling these numbers. And each phone call connects to the conference bridge, and you can answer it and talk to them and pretend they're directly connected to you. And they don't know that they're on a conference bridge, and you don't know, but you know. So what happens is it basically looks from their side that you're talking directly to them, but in reality you actually don't have to hang up when someone disconnects and wait for the next call to come back in or ring your line, and it's instantaneous to it. So we have this little graphic that basically displays, you know, the radio station's looking for caller number 9, you connect up to conference bridge, you run your script, and it generates, you know, multiple call files at once, and, you know, you get some intern there answering their line saying, oh, sorry, you're caller number 1, sorry, you're caller number 2, sorry, you're caller number 3. And eventually, you know, you'll run into a point where someone actually else gets into the line. And, you know, you end up being caller number 5, caller number 6, and eventually, hopefully, you end up actually being caller number 9, and at which point you win and you enjoy your winnings. There's some problems with this script. After you win, calls that are still in the queue waiting for it, I mean, you win, you turn off your script, however, there's calls still actually being connected to that you can't kill automatically. And what happens if someone answers those lines, it'll be connected to the bridge. So what happens will be radio station guy number 1 will say, hey, you win. And I'll be like, yeah, all right. At which point radio station guy number 2 comes in, hey, we already have a winner. Radio station guy number 1 at this point will be really, really confused. At which point they'll all figure that, oh, I must be on a bridge or some wire's been crossed someplace. There's no really easy way to fix this, as far as I can tell. I looked into a couple options for it, and I never actually found a solution that completely works. However, maybe someday I'll be enlightened and finish up the script to have something flawlessly working. Unlikely, but it may happen. Other possible uses I found with this was my original idea for this was rigging telephone voting contests. I was watching American Idol one night with my fiance. She likes it. I watch it anyway. And I figured, hey, what happens when I flood their voting lines with 10 billion calls? And it's an 800 number, so my VoIP service actually isn't affected by it. They're affected by it. I don't get charged.
Yeah, you could make the really, really horrible guy win American Idol.
Aren't they all really horrible?
Well, okay, yeah. The worst of the horrible contestants on American Idol, but I guess it's kind of like being the shortest midget.
Yes. Another idea that I had was telephone denial service. What happens if you call a number that has 5 open lines with 300 phone calls? Oops, looks like they're not getting phone calls today. The idea that I came up with, another one, was telling PBS to wrap up their pledge break and get on back to Red Dwarf, as in suddenly display a message to all these people waiting on their pledge line saying, hey, time to end your pledge break, get back. Another idea that I had was sending them out to all to a conference bridge and just sort of look them at the background of their pledge break, because on PBS and my station, you all see the people on the phones in the background, and just connect them all to a conference bridge and just look at the looks of their faces. Again, with telephone or denial service, you can busy out lines. And another idea I had was racking up 800 number charges because, you know, with... Okay, I'm just going to take this from the top again.
All right.
Another script that you can use is Nmap by phone. And for those of you who don't know, I believe this was on Binmer Radio before. I believe it was episode 100, which was the telephonic craptacular. It's a simple script that allows you to port scan from your phone, scan a computer from any payphone in the world, press your friends, own Microsoft.com while driving from work, In reality, it's almost but not entirely useless beyond the coolness factor. One of my friends found an application for this because he likes to he actually does security auditing for sites, and one of the things you occasionally need to do is if something's not happening on your end, like you know your packets are getting filtered, you want to make sure it's on your end and not on their end, or you want to make sure that it's actually working correctly on their end rather than be confused by something that's happening on your end. So you can actually set this on home and port scan it from the box and make sure you can compare your results between wherever you are and your house, or in this case, wherever the Astra server is. Another idea I had was your own personal assistant, and I've actually coded up proof of concept for this. Everyone can have it on my website. Basically, what it is read your email over the phone. You can't just take messages, of course, because we don't have XML. Not as cool as something called Wildfire or Webly. These are two automated assistants that I ran into very, very early in my computing career, and I thought they were both extremely cool. It's wildfire.com or webly.com, W-E-B-L-E-Y, for those of you interested.
Isn't the dictation bit not it's not dependent so much on VXML, but just any sort of voice recognition engine?
VXML would understand it a whole lot better. There's certain speech recognition engines, but the VXML would basically it's understood that this functionality can be built into it.
I see.
I've heard of certain speech recognition programs, but none of them actually worked with Asterisk correctly, as far as I know. So while it's not as cool as Wildfire or Webly, it's insanely cheaper. I believe Wildfire takes 4 simultaneous SQL servers to operate correctly. I don't know where I heard that, but it seems to be correct. And like I said, VXML would make this much cooler. Anyway, do you want to talk about DEF CON by phone?
I think I'll do that. Anyway, for DEF CON, you know, if any of you have ever been to DEF CON, you know that there are several problems with the schedule. A, it's incredibly huge. B, it's hard to memorize. C, times and locations change, and you don't really remember when the presentation you wanted to see was, or you know, you forget about it, and then you realize when it's too late. And really, this is the middle of the first decade of the 21st century. Who wants to carry around a schedule made of dead trees anyway? So the thing that I came up with is called DEF CON by phone. And what it allows is it allows you to search the DEF CON schedule. It reminds you, it's basically this interactive telephone-based schedule of the convention. So it lets you search through the schedule. It can be set to remind you when a presentation is about to start. You can have it call you back and say, hello, this is the DEF CON by phone interactive schedule, just calling to remind you that the show you wanted to see, Be Your Own Telephone Company with Asterisk, presented by Strom Carlson and Black Ratchet, is going to happen in 90 minutes at the Parthenon 3 and 4. So it'll...
Wow, you remembered all of that. Congratulations.
Yes. Well, you know, it's an important event in my life.
Yes.
So it'll call you back and let you know ahead of time that the talk is going to happen. And for talks that you've set reminders for, it can also call you back and let you know that a presentation has changed. You know, because, of course, we know that the DEF CON schedule is out of date even before it gets printed. So, since the schedule is always changing and there are constant problems with it, DEF CON by phone is a way for you as the convention attendee to keep on top of all the nonsense that the DEF CON schedule goes through. It lets you keep in touch with the con despite being at the blackjack table or playing poker or whatever. So you can...
Blackjack.
Yes. Love winning money. And, of course... Best of all, it allows users to get a phone call from a recording of me. And let me tell you, when I was testing this thing, just getting random phone calls from recordings of yourself is the weirdest damn thing. I mean, you don't get used to it. Even when you're expecting it, it's bizarre.
Or getting interrupted by Strom and I were driving down the strip, and I was talking to him, and I get a phone call. And I don't even check the caller ID because, you know, it's DEF CON, and I was getting all kinds of crazy phone calls then anyway. And I pick it up, and my conversation with Strom was interrupted by Strom. And I was just like, whoa, that's kind of surreal.
Yeah, it's bizarre. So the features, there's a quick search available to anyone who calls. And there's a quick reminder to tell you what's coming up in the next hour. And you can register, and registered users can, of course, add reminders, delete reminders, and be notified if events are changed or canceled. How does it work? Well, I think Ratchet X here with most of the code. I just actually did all the talking. But
no, you came up with the original idea and concept.
Yeah. So we're both totally responsible for this total disaster. It's database-driven. Duh. There are just countless audio clips of me saying things. You know, and I had to read the entire schedule into the computer, plus all of the control phrases and whatnot. So that was a lot of talking, more talking than I intended it to be.
Yep.
And there's an AGI that handles user registration, searching, reminders, and so on. And there's a daemon that checks for reminders every, 1 minute or 10 seconds or something, and generates call files for reminders.
I believe we originally were going to do 10 seconds, but we actually bumped it up to a minute because of the sheer load on the servers.
Right. And there's a web interface that controls the addition of events and changing the times of the presentations. We kind of didn't realize...
A very hastily constructed web interface.
Yeah. When we were throwing this together, we didn't really realize how much work it was going to be. And so, of course, you know, the first 10% of the work got done in the first 95% of the available time. And then the remaining 90% of the work got done in the last 5% of the available time. So
my Friday morning at DEF CON was essentially coding up all the stuff that I completely forgot about.
Mm-hmm. And it was us bug fixing and also dealing with the fact that Richard Zimmerman, the PGP guy, was late.
Phil Zimmerman.
Phil Zimmerman, you can tell I'm tired. The PGP guy was late for his talk. So they said, oh, well, you know what we'll do? Let's just push the entire slot back a whole hour. We were expecting schedule changes, but nothing that severe. So we were running around like beheaded chickens.
Yeah, I did not anticipate that at all. I didn't even know they would even think about doing that. I think, you know, oh, someone's not here? Oh, okay, let's go move their presentation to at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
No, let's not do that. Phil Zimmerman's important. And I was going, but that doesn't make sense. So
whoever said DEFCON had to make sense?
True. Anyway, so that was one of the few other things about it. So my Friday morning was essentially coding up something that would automatically pump everything back by an hour, and then send the contacts out. So, but it worked. It for the most part. There was more than a few problems. Like the DEF CON info booth was not forthcoming with all the information that they knew.
Oh yes, we went to them and we said, hi, we're doing the interactive telephone schedule. Will you please do us the hugest favor ever? Here is all my contact information. Please, 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 please give me any information about any and all schedule changes as soon as you know about them. Okay, we'll do that. So I went there at the end of the day, and I hadn't heard a peep from them. And I said, you know, I haven't heard a thing from you all day, and our version of the schedule is kind of looking less and less and less like reality as the day wears on. Have you gotten any schedule changes at all? Oh, yeah, we've gotten them. Tons of them. It was at this point that I wanted to draw a big circle in the wall and bang my head into it repeatedly, but...
Still, we persevered.
Yes, we persevered. Next year, we will try and make this a more organized production.
Yes, and hopefully have something called Hope by Phone, which I will code up and twice as many recordings for Strom to do.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so I guess we're going to kind of wrap up the presentation here with part three, why Astra sucks, or what you would call caveats.
Mm-hmm.
Here, you've run into this more than I have, so you can talk about your wonderful TDM experiences.
Well, the Digium TDM cards are not – they're good, but they are kind of flaky. The first major problem is that connecting a station interface to a phone line can be dangerous because if the phone line rings, there goes your module. And that's a $90 module. So be very, very careful.
Yes, make sure you know what you're plugging into where.
Yes. Be absolutely certain.
Always practice safe telephony. Know where you're sucking. Well, know where you're sticking certain things.
Yes. We may not need safe sex, but we certainly need safe...
Supervision.
Yeah, safe supervision. I'm tired and I can't even say that correctly. Blah.
Anyway,
with apologies to Evan Dorbell. The cards sometimes go crazy for absolutely no reason. You just pick up and they go staticky, or there's problems with interrupts and whatever.
Don't ring.
And, yeah.
Yeah. And the drivers are not completely bug-free, so, you know, there are just problems every now and again.
More than a few of that. One of our friends had a TDM card to interface to his phone line that would suddenly stop. It would, like, suddenly chop off the first digit, whatever he was dialing. Like, for example, instead of 1-3-1-1, it would dial 3-1-1, which was completely incompatible with his routing, with his phone routing on his telephone line, and it would constantly give him a reorder. Another fun thing is that when you're connecting it to your phone line, it doesn't actually wait for a dial tone, so if your dial tone, God forbid, is slow, it starts dialing immediately, which is something that the modem industry solved years ago, but apparently Digium hasn't gotten around to yet. So, also, the main thing that I have, I guess you can call this a rager complaint with asterisk for me, because I absolutely love it. There's certain code restrictions. For those of you who are getting into a hissy fit right now, asterisk is GPL, so it is open source. However, all the code contributed to asterisk is owned by Digium. I contributed a couple of pieces of code. Basically, what I have to do is, the first time I did it, is I had to sign away my rights to all my code that I ever submitted ever to them and fax that over to their corporate HQ. In reality, it's probably like an apartment someplace. But anyway, I don't have any rights. I don't own my code anymore. And I need to have, basically, they won't talk to you unless they have that waiver on record. Digium does have commercial options, so they technically can sell my code, but I'm not exactly sure what those are. And it's like some type of like high availability asterisk.
Yeah, asterisk business edition.
Yeah, I don't know what that consists of, mainly because I don't want to pay for it. termination issues, we talked about this lightly last time. Proper call progression, supported in protocols. Some providers, don't support it, and tough luck if you want to intercept.
VoIP just started supporting it, so.
Yeah, but I think they did, but I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Most providers have nowhere near 5.9s uptime, so Broad Voice had a nice weekend where they wouldn't enter any phone calls, and you couldn't make or receive phone calls on any of your numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what they did during that weekend was hide their desk and cower. So, yeah. Plus, you know, if your internet connection goes down, you know, your phone line's screwed, blah, blah, blah. Some providers, you know, lose your registration, not in the sense where they lose all your credit card information, but your asterisk boss suddenly can't talk to them. So what essentially you have to do is you have to kick asterisk or have them re-register, turn off your asterisk install, and then restart it back up or do a reload of configuration. There's tons of ways you can do it, but it's a bit annoying when you suddenly call up and you can't get into your phone line. Further reading and resources, asterisk.org, blackratchet.org, digium.com, stromcarlson.com, voip-info.org, which is a they just sell stuff, right? They don't have
no. It's a wiki.
Oh no! I'm thinking of VoIP Supply, which is another one you should check out. VoIPSupply.com.
Lots of cool gadgets that you will spend lots of money on to make your credit card burst into flames.
Yeah, so lots of stuff to spend your lunch money on, kids. Anyway, that basically wraps up our asterisk presentation. Do you have any closing points?
My bed sounds really good right now.
We'll get there in a moment. Announcements. There's coming up this week is Software Freedom Day, which is I found about this from my local Linux user group. It's the 9/10/2005. And what it is Software Freedom Day is a global grassroots effort to educate the public about virtues and availability of free and open source software. Over 200 teams are registered so far, and they have plans to celebrate free software at schools, universities, parks, and many other public areas. And
what the heck they're doing celebrating at universities on a Saturday is beyond me. But
anyway, they're Unix guys, so what do you expect? and basically, they're also our site of the week, which is softwarefreedomday.org. So, do you have any shouts this week?
None that I can think of, except don't forget our new voicemail line number, which, again, if you didn't catch it the first 5 times I said it, is 213-415-1047.
Oh, I'll go send shouts out to Buck Rogers, the Kid, Stalin, all from Boston 2600. You people on the forums would know them. Email us at radioopenrev.com.
This is a subliminal message. Email us. This ends the subliminal message. You may now return to your regularly scheduled not emailing.
Yes. Our closing music tonight is a band called Chillak, which is, and their song is 1,000 Hertz. And it's H-U-R-T-Z, but I like just the title of it. Anyway, so we will see you next week. Same hack time.
Same hack channel.